This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 10. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, the courage, and the commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cachette. I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
So we are rapidly approaching the end of 2014. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. Where has this year gone?
I know. It's flown by. We only have a couple weeks left. And, you know, as always happens as we approach the end of the year, I do some reflecting on the past year and kind of evaluate where I've come and the goals I've accomplished and all that. And more times than not, I haven't quite accomplished what I thought I would.
Well, I had the same experience. I mean, I set out with great goals, and inevitably I fail at a few of them, but I do think it's possible.
I do think it's possible, too.
To accomplish the ones that matter most.
Well, let's just to kind of get started on this topic of goal setting, I have a few interesting statistics for you. First of all, 25% of people abandon their New Year's resolutions after 1 week. 25%. That's one in every four that makes
a
New Year's resolution. They pretty much abandon them after 1 week. That's so fast. I think I was surprised to read that.
I know. In a sense, it wasn't surprising because I don't think resolutions really work for most people. We'll talk about that more as we get into this episode, but not that surprising, probably.
This also was more compelling to me. 60% of those who make New Year's resolutions abandon them within 6 months. So now we're talking, now we're in the majority of those who make them abandon them within 6 months, which really confirms what you just said, that they don't really work.
And probably the rest of them aren't being honest.
Yeah, probably true.
I bet, seriously, in reality, I bet it's a higher percentage. I think it's really hard to survey for this kind of information to get the truth.
Yeah, because people don't want to admit that they didn't do what they said.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this is even better. The average person makes the same New Year's resolution 10 separate times without success.
That's sobering, isn't it?
I know. Have you done the same resolution?
I actually have done that. I don't know if I've gotten as high as 10, but I have seen the same resolution show up on my list multiple years.
Mm, like losing 10 pounds or reading more books or, you know, whatever. We make the same one again, spending more time with our kids or, you know, whatever it may
be. Whatever it is.
Which is actually doesn't need to be a New Year's resolution. It probably should be a daily resolution. But so 60% do so within 6 months. And then that average person makes the same resolution 10 separate times without success. And here's another one specifically about weight and diet, which tends to be a common theme for New Year's resolutions. 5% of those who lose weight on a diet keep it off.
5%.
Keep it off.
Sobering.
Only 5%. 95% regain it. And a significant percentage gain back more than they originally lost, which I can already hear some people say, oh, there you go. I don't need to have a diet this year because it just proves that it's not going to work.
No, this is a huge industry.
It is.
And of course, at the first of the year is, you know, prime time for people that are wanting to lose weight, probably because the guilt of overeating during the holidays and, you know, the fresh start and this year is going to be different and all of that. But this is sobering to think that 95% regain it and a significant portion gain more than they lost.
Oh, that's frightening. So we don't want to be that person. We really, when we set goals, when we have something that we want to achieve and shoot for, we want to be the kind of people that actually follow through on it. We don't want to be the people that abandon ship after a week or after 6 months or, heaven forbid, end up achieving the opposite of what we set out to do, where we gain weight rather than losing weight. So how do we do that?
Well, first of all, I think we have to acknowledge that resolutions don't work.
Okay.
You know, there's got to be a different way of doing it. And one of the things that I started doing about 12 years ago is engaging in a very deliberate, very thoughtful process of goal setting. And I really believe that goal setting done right works.
Okay. So now stop for a minute. What is, I mean, are we just talking semantics here, goals, resolutions, or what's the difference between the two?
No, and we'll talk about this as we go through the content of this episode, but there's a very specific way to construct a goal that helps you ensure that you'll follow through on it. And so just to have a dream or an aspiration or a stated intention is not enough. There's a specific format that you've got to use to make this happen. And it's one of the reasons why I developed this course that we launched last year, 5 days to your best year ever. I tried to take everything I had practiced and learned about goal setting over more than a decade and reduce it to some simple lessons that people could follow to achieve what matters most for them.
And you know, that program, 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever, had some great results. In fact, I've got a testimonial from Lisa Baker from Chicago, Illinois, and this is what she said. I've always been someone who had big dreams for my life. Every year I would set a handful of goals full of hope for the future, but inevitably I got derailed and eventually gave up. Oh goodness, I've been there, Lisa. In fact, as the new year approached this year, I had just about decided to quit setting goals altogether, but then I found the 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever course. For the first time in my life, I had the confidence of knowing I was using a system that actually worked, and I finally had a realistic step-by-step plan to reach the goals that mattered most to me. Not only have I been shocked by the things I've accomplished, but so have my friends and family. I feel so proud that I'm reaching more of my potential with every passing day. That's quite a testimonial.
You know, I'm so blessed by those testimonials, and we sent out a film crew around the country and gathered a bunch of these, and this will be part of our rollout for the course this year. But it's incredibly satisfying to see not the people that are these statistics, mm-hmm. but people that actually have been deliberate, have been thoughtful, and are accomplishing the things that really matter, things mm-hmm. that maybe have eluded them for years or decades, and to actually be achieving those.
Well, a big piece of this course, 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever, is on goal setting. And today we're going to talk about the biggest mistakes that people make in goal setting and how to fix them. Because really, those mistakes that are made on the front end in setting the goals are actually what sets you up for success or failure down the road.
Absolutely.
So let's get started. The very first mistake that people make in setting goals.
The first mistake is that they don't write their goals down. And this is huge. A lot of times people just say it out loud or they tell a friend, but it's not really something they write down. Now, I don't know, Michelle, if you've heard of this study that was done in 1953, an MBA study that was done at Harvard. And basically, here's how it's reported. 3% of the graduating class had written goals. It was back in 1953. Mm-hmm. They tracked these students for 30 years. In 1983, they discovered that those 3% on average, we're making 10 times as much as the rest of the class combined. It's a great story, but unfortunately it never happened. So that study was never done. And it was debunked by a lot of people, including Yale University. But there was a study that was done at Dominican University in California by a woman, a psychologist by the name of Dr. Gail Matthews.
Okay.
And she did this study on about 267 participants. And one of the things that she discovered, and this is important and powerful, is that you're 42% more likely to achieve your goals just by writing them down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a power in writing down a goal that begins to give it life and begins to move you toward that goal. A book that I read with my children several years ago and with my wife, we took it actually on a vacation, and it was awesome. It's called Write It Down, Make It Happen.
Uh-huh.
I don't agree with everything in the book, but one of the arguments that the author makes is that when you do write something down, you set something in motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not this like this big, you know, set something in motion in the universe kind of thing, but it's just you solidify or make concrete your own intention
mm-hmm.
and begin to focus your own efforts and your attention toward accomplishing that goal. So that's the first mistake people make, is just not writing the goal down.
So interesting. I actually have an index card that I wrote down goals, things that I wanted to accomplish. I did this back probably 6 years ago, and I was sitting at a conference and they were talking about goals, and I decided to write on this index card, just a 3x5 card, what I wanted to see happen over the coming years. And I intentionally wrote down things that seemed too far out of the realm of possibility. Like they just really seemed, they were so huge. And I thought, there's just no way this is going to happen, but I'm going to write it down anyway. This coming year, they will all come true.
Wow.
The last one on the list will actually be true. And I still have that card. Of course, it's all frayed and everything. It's been in my purse for that long. But you know, I've seen that actually happen. Simply writing it down kind of changed the course of my life, because all of a sudden they didn't just become these far off things that will never happen. They were something that, even in just writing them, became kind of the focus, something that I was intentional toward.
It's like you put a stake in the ground almost.
Yeah.
After we read this book, we were on a family vacation. We all wrote a list of the 100 things we wanted to do before we died.
Uh-huh.
And I went back and recently reviewed that. I put it in an Excel spreadsheet. I know you'd be disappointed if I hadn't.
but I did.
But it's kind of my bucket list. And I was amazed at how many of those things I'd already accomplished, even though I didn't have an action plan, even though I hadn't done anything beyond just writing them down.
Uh-huh.
So just that act has value all by itself.
That's great. Okay, so that's one of the first mistakes, or
the first mistake,
right, is they don't write them down. So now we have a whole list of 10. Let's move on to number 2. We got a bunch to get through, so we're going to have to fly. Okay, number 2
is they create too many. There's an old Chinese proverb. Too many goals.
Okay.
There's an old Chinese proverb that says, man who chases two rabbits catches neither.
I love that proverb.
Isn't that a great proverb? But it's true in goal setting, too. Sometimes, you know, we decide we're going to rehabilitate our life. We're going to get really serious about goal setting. And we set 20, 25, 30 different goals in all these different areas. It's too many.
Okay.
My rule of thumb generally is that you need to set 5 to 7 goals. That's
okay.
Ideal.
It's difficult. That was my next question.
Difficult for our mind to focus on more than 7, but definitely no more than 10. So this forces you to choose and prioritize. You only have a certain amount of attention. You only have a certain amount of resources. And if you divide them over too many goals, you really kind of build in your own failure.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next mistake.
Okay. The next mistake, number 3, is that they only focus on one area of their life. So it's very common for people to have goals as it relates to their career.
Okay.
But if you're going to be fully expressed as a human being, if you're going to become all that you were created to be, you've got to set goals in the other areas of your life. Your health, for example,
okay.
Your spiritual life, your marriage, your involvement in the community, and yes, career goals. But all those different slices of the pie have to be addressed if you're going to experience happiness mm-hmm. and meaning as a human being.
So now, on the last mistake, you were talking about the quantity and that you would recommend 5 to 7. And if you're talking about writing goals in multiple areas of your life, is it 5 to 7 per area or 5 to 7 total? And you just divide those up?
I say 5 to 7 total.
Okay. So you might have 1 or 2 related to your career and 1 or 2 related to family and 1 or 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yep. Got it.
Yep. And sometimes it's just one big one in my family. You know, this year, the only thing I really want to achieve, and I'm making this up, is I want to have a date night with my spouse once a week.
Okay.
That may be your only goal, but you realize that in having that one goal, you're going to really move the needle in terms of your family, in terms of your relationship with your spouse.
Well, that kind of leads us right to the next mistake, because I was going to ask you if, you know, you can't just make a goal that just says, I just want to spend more time
yeah.
with my family. We have to move beyond that, which is the 4th mistake. What is it?
That's people don't make their goals specific.
All right.
And this really, in a sense, could be number one, because I see this one violated over and over again. People say, I want to lose weight, or I want a better marriage, or I want a promotion. And that's not specific.
Or like I said, I just want to spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
That's not specific enough. I mean, that's a good intention, but that's not specific
enough.
That's
right. So here's an example. I might have a goal called write a book, but that's not really a goal. It's a dream. But if I say I want to finish the Life Plan Manifesto manuscript, which is a book that I wrote last year, that's the kind of specificity we're looking for. Or I want to learn photography, too general. But to say I want to complete Lynda.com's Photography 101 course, that's the kind of specificity that
okay.
we need.
All right. And that actually gives you some kind of parameters to move forward.
Yes.
Got it.
And by the way, the reason you want it specific is you want to know when you've achieved it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't look back on the activity and say, yes, I did that, I can check it off my list, it's not specific enough. So if you say, for example, I want to lose weight, well, how much? 5
mm-hmm.
pounds, 10 pounds, 30 pounds? You want to be able to cross the finish line, check it off, and have the satisfaction that you've achieved the goal.
And for those of us that are in love with lists, it's very important to check it off the
yes,
list.
Yes, it
so
is.
So very critical. It gives you that feeling of success. What's the 5th mistake?
5th mistake is they don't make them measurable. You know, what gets measured gets improved. And to be able to measure it is partly an aspect of specificity, but let me give an example. If I say I want to lose weight, we already said that doesn't mm-hmm. have the specificity. But if I say I want to lose 35 pounds, I'm going to know mm-hmm. when I accomplish that. So that's making it measurable. Or another example, I want to earn more money. Well, how much more money? You know, if you said I want to convince my boss to give me a 10% raise, that's a measurable goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want it something that you can measure, something that's quantifiable, something that you know when you cross the finish line.
And you said that too about when you made the comment about, I want to go on a date with my wife once a week. That sets a very kind
That's
of
right. It's something
measurable.
You can track and something you can make progress toward. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Okay, so we've gone through 5 of this list of the 10 biggest mistakes people make in goal setting. Just to recap, they don't write them down. They create too many. 3, they only focus on one area of their life. 4, they don't make them specific. 5, they don't make them measurable. And what is 6?
They don't assign a due date.
Okay, so what do you mean by that?
Well, you've got to have a date, a by when you're going to accomplish that date. I'm going to lose 35 pounds by April the 1st or June the 2nd or whatever it is. But there's a lot of benefits of deadlines. And I want to give you a few of these because I think it's tough, Because if we put a deadline on something, then suddenly we're accountable for it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think there's a part of me that doesn't want to put a deadline because I can't predict what's going to happen next month
right.
or later even this week. So something may come up, so I don't want to put a deadline on it. But you think the deadline
Absolutely.
Still matters.
And here's why. Three benefits.
Okay.
Number one, deadlines create a sense of urgency.
Okay.
When you've got a deadline, when I realize that this has got to be done by a certain date, then it's going to focus my attention and it's going to make me work toward that. And I realize I got to get in business. I got to get, you know, in the game if I'm going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they balance your workload. You know, you can't accomplish everything at once. And when you do deadlines, some deadlines you're maybe going to attack or some goals you're going to attack in the second half of the year.
Yes.
Some in the first quarter, some in the second quarter, but they balance your workload.
Mm-hmm.
Third benefit of a deadline is it helps you prioritize your daily tasks. Not everything we do every day is important, but we ought to be spending some time moving towards the important and not merely the urgent. But the deadline gives us that sense of self-generated urgency as opposed to the urgency that comes from our circumstances and from the people around us.
So if you have something due tomorrow or something that you set a deadline of Friday, you might work on that to try to tackle
right.
that rather than something that's not, that doesn't have a deadline for a couple months.
Yeah, and unfortunately, what happens to most of us is deadlines are imposed by other people.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that are really important that we said matter to us, we don't put a deadline on them, and so we never
yes.
get to them. There's not that sense of urgency. You know, I've got my boss asked me to work late this week, so I'm not going to take my wife out on that date that I said was important.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have a deadline, then it creates that urgency that makes it happen.
Is it important to set maybe smaller deadlines or due dates, like incremental? For example, I have a second book that's due in March. That's far away. And so there's a sense that deadline's so far out there. And so what I have to do is almost set some shorter deadlines for myself.
Yeah,
intermediate ones that will help push me forward toward that deadline. Because sometimes the deadline that's so far out doesn't have the same urgency that maybe a deadline 30 days from now. And if I can like schedule it out, it helps.
Yeah, the danger is, first of all, yes, on bigger projects like that, it's helpful to have intermediate deadlines.
Okay.
Sometimes if we're not careful, though, it can cause us to overplan.
Okay.
And it becomes a kind of a fancy way of procrastinating.
Hmm.
What I think is more important than identifying a full action plan, and again, sometimes that's necessary if you're building a house. I'm going through some construction on my
mm-hmm.
house right now. I want to see the full plan. But in most cases, we don't need that. But what is important is I want to understand what the next action is and assign a deadline to that. So
okay.
in your case, maybe it's creating the outline for the book.
Okay.
You know, or outlining that chapter or writing the first two chapters. So you don't need to really see the end from the beginning. But you need to at least see to the next step so you can make progress and build momentum.
Okay, makes sense. All right, moving on to the seventh mistake people make in goal setting.
This is important as well, is they don't keep them visible. You know, they create the goals, they lose them in their computer, they lose them in their desk drawer, and they just don't keep them visible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't keep them visible, you're going to forget about them because life has a way of coming at you faster than you can process, and you get sidetracked, you know, squirrel. You know, you're off to something else, sidetracked
yes.
by something else and not focused on what you said at the beginning of the year is what matters most. So you've got to keep them visible.
Where do you put your goals?
Well,
so you see them regularly.
I put mine in Evernote.
Okay.
So
do
I
you
have,
actually go to Evernote to look at them
yes,
regularly?
Yes, and I have a shortcut that's on my Evernote sidebar.
Okay.
So I have several things that are shortcuts to different notes that are important to me. And so I have a note that in this case is my 2014 goals. And when I click on that, I see all my goals. Now, that's not the only thing I do with them because I also track them in a task manager.
Okay.
But I want them summarized in one place where they give me visibility so I know what those goals are, those seven goals that are most important for this year.
Is there value in having an actual hard copy somewhere? Just because, you know, there's times that we're not always in front of our computer. Is there value
there
to
are?
Have it? Well, okay. For the rest of the normal world, there are moments when we're not in front of our computer. But is there some value in having that written somewhere where
I
you
think
can...
depending on your style, you got to use what works for you. I've
okay.
done everything and seen everything from people actually framing them and putting them on a on their wall in front of them. I've done that from time to time. To creating a vision board so that it's really graphic
okay.
and color and compelling. Or again, digitally. The thing I love about Evernote, and I'm not, you know, I get nothing for advocating this, but the thing I love about Evernote is that it's with me no matter what device
yes.
I have. Where I am. It's on my cell phone and my Evernote account there. It's everywhere I am.
Mm-hmm. And I like Evernote for that reason as well. Okay. The eighth mistake that people make in setting goals.
They don't stretch outside their comfort zone. And the reason why this is important is that very rarely will a goal be compelling enough to you to get you to do anything unless it's outside your comfort zone? Mm-hmm. If it's just kind of like a small incremental improvement, like let's say I have a goal and I'm going to lose 3 pounds in the next 3 months. Yeah, it's just, there's no jazz in that. It's not compelling.
I could just skip lunch and maybe do that.
Yeah.
That's not really a stretch.
And I actually look for three kinds of negative emotions that indicate I'm on the right path. And this is a reframing of these emotions. You and I have talked about how we struggle with some of these emotions. But one is fear. I know I'm outside my comfort zone when I feel that little ping in my heart that I'm afraid. You know, that little bit of, I might not be able to do this.
Uh-huh.
It might not work out. That's an indication to me that I'm on the right path. Another one is uncertainty. Well, I don't know how I would accomplish that. Let me tell you something. In goal setting, identifying the what is way more important than identifying how.
Okay.
The how will show up once you get clarity about the what. So if you have uncertainty about the goal, that's actually a very good thing because something is going to have to show up in you and your way of thinking about something to accomplish it that you're not clear on now. And that's an indication that the goal is outside of the comfort zone.
You know, that's true. As you're talking, that's true. Like if taking a trip, that we have to find the pinpoint on the map of where we're headed first. And then the how ends up presenting itself,
the
road.
That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah. But if we try to find the how without knowing the pinpoint destination, we'll be all
that's
over
right.
the place. Great.
The
okay.
third, let me just give you the last, the
yes.
third emotion that I look for is doubt. You know, maybe I don't have the resources. Maybe I'm not sure that I
well,
have what
Well, then that
it takes.
Means I'm on the right track. I
You're
just
totally
want you to
right
know. Because doubt seems to be always at my shoulder.
But that's an indication that you're onto a goal that you're going to find compelling enough to follow through. Now, I'm not talking about getting psychotic, you know, or
yes.
crazy about it. But I am. It's got to be something that is a little bit outside of your reach.
Yes. Well, because that's really the only way that we grow is to stretch.
Totally.
If we play it safe all the time, we're never really going to grow as leaders, as influencers, or even just as people,
exactly
or character,
right.
or everything else. That's great. Okay, so that eighth mistake is they don't stretch outside their comfort zones. What is number nine?
Number nine is they don't make them compelling. And this is important because if the goal doesn't compel you, you're not going to put the effort in to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
And compelling goals, I think, are either spiritually meaningful, intellectually stimulating, emotionally energizing, or physically challenging.
Okay.
So it's a little bit about kind of like being
mm-hmm.
outside of your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to ask yourself.
Can you say those four one more time just to make sure we get them all?
Spiritually meaningful.
Okay.
Intellectually stimulating, emotionally energizing, or physically challenging.
Okay, that makes total sense.
So goals that don't motivate you, that are just set out of a sense of duty, I promise you, you're not going to follow through on those.
Oh, no, of course not. There's too many other things
There's
competing
too many other things.
For our attention.
And that's why you got to focus on the positive benefit of achieving the goal. Like, for example, if it sounds not that compelling to spend a date night with your spouse, you're not going to follow through.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, what would it be like if I had a deeper, more meaningful relationship with my spouse,
mm-hmm.
where I'm understood and I can say anything freely, and we have this level of intimacy between
mm-hmm.
us, you know, then all of a sudden, okay, that's compelling
okay, that
to me.
Okay, that is very compelling. Uh-huh. Just even talking about it.
So it's just a different way of reframing it.
Okay. So that ninth one, they don't make them compelling. What is the final mistake that people make in setting goals?
Well, they don't identify the next action. And in essence, we talked about this when we were talking about action plans. The way I was taught in the corporate world is that you go through the strategic planning process. You identify your goals for next year, and then you develop these detailed action plans. And I mean, I have seen unbelievably detailed mm-hmm. action plan software that was designed to do this very thing. And so often, I've seen those action plans, those strategic plans, put into a notebook, put into the shelf, and never looked at again. They're just too complex. It's overwhelming. And again, I want to say, if you're building a submarine, if you're adding on to your house, you may want that kind of specificity and that kind of detail.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us, that's a fancy way of procrastinating. And really, what we need to do is just to identify the next action. What's the next thing I need to do to move the ball down the field?
Forward.
Mm-hmm. For me at least, if it's the right goal, I rarely see how I'm going to get there. I don't know how I'm going to achieve it. You know, when you've just gone through a book writing process yourself.
Exactly.
And at the beginning, it seems overwhelming.
Oh, it's totally. In fact, that's why I think I'm having a hard time diving into number two, because I'm looking at the big, huge project and all that needs to be done. And it's like, where do I start?
Well, and now you have the disadvantage of knowing what it takes.
Oh, yes. I know. Before, I was just ignorant. So,
well,
you know.
I remember I had to tell the story. When I got my first book contract, this was back in 1997, I got my first book contract after about 30 publishers that said no. So I was so elated. I was so excited that literally for, I don't know, maybe 10 seconds, I celebrated. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to write this book. I told him I could do it, and I have no idea where to start.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that feeling. It's like, oh no, now I have to actually write it.
But I think that's true for most of life. But if we can identify the next step, I felt less overwhelmed when I was able to identify. And I'll tell you how I do almost every book that I write now this way. I say, okay, I'm going to set up the folder structure on my computer.
Okay, now that makes me laugh, because that's exactly what I do. I open up Scrivener and I organize the folders. Because once the folders are organized and then it starts to get real and I feel better. It's kind of like organizing my closet. Then I can find things, which probably means we're both neurotic. But I do the
that's
exact
another topic.
Yeah.
And then from there, then the next action for me is I want to do what they call in publishing world the front matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the table of contents, the copyright page, and a lot of that's just boilerplate, but I get all that finessed. Then I'll go through, in every one of those files, I'll set up the title, I'll put a place for an epigraph if I'm going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of framing together the structure. I'm not really doing any writing yet, but I'm starting to get some momentum.
Well, and just taking the next action sometimes is what kind of starts the creative process and everything else. I mean, again, going back to the map and the pinpoint, you know, taking the first few steps, then you can see the path clearly enough to take the next few
steps. That's the hardest part, right?
Yes.
The hardest part of running is not the running, it's getting out of bed.
Tying on the shoes,
you know? Mm-hmm. And the same thing, like back to the book thing again, I always encourage authors, and I do this myself, and you can do this in nonfiction, not fiction, but I write the easiest chapter first.
Mm-hmm.
That may be chapter 12 in the book, but I want to get the sense of momentum. What I don't do is start out with the hardest chapter.
No.
That's like a rock too big to push.
Yeah, not a good idea. I love this. I think this 10th one is probably the one that's most transformational to me right now, this idea of just the next action.
Yep.
You don't have to see 100 miles down the road, but just the next step.
Well, and I think for most goals that we take on, it's not the goal that's so daunting. The real battle is between our ears. The real battle is for our thinking.
I call it the committee in my head. Oh, no. Did I just reveal too much? All the people talking in my head.
I had a committee, too. You know, multiple voices.
Yes.
And I think the people that really achieve big things, this has been my experience, it's definitely true, with every goal I've taken on, I have so much doubt. That committee is so loud sometimes in my head. You know, we're going through a launch right now of a product as we're recording this. And all this morning, I'm battling the committee in my head.
Uh-huh.
But I know that if I just stay in the game, if I just, you know, take the next action, what's the next most important thing? If I'll do that next most important thing, most of life has a way of working out.
That is so true. And it all comes back to this whole idea of goals again and why it's so important that that we don't just have these big nebulous dreams out there, but we actually translate that into tangible goals that we write down that gives us kind of a plan and where we're going, helps us to focus and live intentionally, which is what this podcast and just your blog, everything is all about.
Well, and that's why this topic is so near and dear to my heart, because I really do want to empower people with a process that moves them towards the things that they want out of life. And, you know, just one final thought or near final thought, because I know you always ask me at the end, but, you know, happiness really isn't in getting more stuff or necessarily in achieving things. It's really in making meaningful progress towards the goals that matter. If we have a sense of progress, that's what brings happiness to our lives.
So true. Now, we are getting ready to launch 5 days to your next...
your best year ever.
Yeah, right? 5 days to your best year ever. It's been completely revamped. I mean, it's better than ever before. So those that that were part of it last year, this past year, who enjoyed it, it's even better now, right?
Yeah, we got feedback from the thousands of people that went through the course, completely rewrote it. Not completely rewrote it. The basic milestones and the building blocks are there, but completely re-recorded it. I rewrote my part of it because I want to make it more accessible and easier to accomplish.
Well, and the good news is it's December, and it's we aren't in the new year yet. We're
That's right.
close. And so you have time to actually get started on this now, which is really brilliant, because we don't want to wait till January 1 to
right.
do this. We really want to get a head start. Why is it important to get a little bit of a head start on this?
Well, because you want to hit the ground running.
Okay.
You know, when everybody else is talking about goal setting, you want to have your goals and be really taking those first few weeks of the next year seriously. So taking 2015 seriously, realizing this could be your best year ever. You know, and the only difference between it being your best year ever and not being your best year ever is your intention and your willingness to follow through with a process, a proven process, that'll get you there.
Well, if 2014, for those of you who are listening, if 2014 did not turn out exactly like you wanted it to, which I understand, not everything goes according to plan, we really want to help turn your 2015 into your best year ever. And so we'll have information in the show notes for this episode on 5 days to your best year ever, and you can be a part of that. We'd love for you to join the family and to join us in this course. And I think 2015 is going to be the best yet.
I do too. You know what? I enter into every year with that expectation. How can I make this coming year better than last year? Because I want to constantly be improving and making progress toward the things that matter to me.
Well, if you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes and a full transcript of this episode at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you would rather watch the video rather than listen to the audio, we also have the video fully recorded at Michael's website. Again, that address is michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts today?
Yeah, you can do this. This really can be your best year ever. And I would just encourage people to go to that website, bestyearever.me, and explore it. See if it's right for you. I think it will be. If you're listening to this podcast, you're the kind of person that this was designed for.
Exactly. And again, that website is bestyearever.me. Well, thank you again for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I will talk about the 5 biggest hiring mistakes leaders make and how to avoid them. You know, and having bad hires, we've all been there where we've had somebody on our team that was just not the right fit. And trying to fix that mistake is almost impossible at times. I mean, you just are way behind, and it's just such a huge task to try to fix a bad hire situation.
Absolutely. And it's still going to happen if you have the right person in process. I mean, you know, the right process in place. But you infinitely increase your prospects of success when you have the right process in place and when you avoid the most common mistakes.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.